It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And away we go, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, and glad to have y'all here. Where it's if they're not rutting in your area, they're probably just about to. I don't know. I mean, I think even the areas that rut late, I've been hearing a lot of people, like we talk about how I'm kind of in a unique place that my deer rut, like they're in the Black Belt, like that mid January rut, but I'm hearing from people where they have that later rut. They're still said, man, they're going crazy on my
place. Are. Everybody I've talked to, they're going crazy, Sean. If you're not seeing it, you're in the wrong place.
You know, and that's something to take away. And y'all can go back and listen to podcast form. Jay Graddick was our guest last week. And I sit back when I got Mike and Jay talking and just learn. But Jay, you know, makes a good point. And when he says it, I go, ding, that light bulb goes off in the head because I've done it before. He said, if you're sitting somewhere for a while, couple hours, and you're just not seeing anything, he gets up and moves. He stays hunting, but he goes to a different location.
Yeah,
because if there's a hot doe in the area, you give it a couple hours, you're going to either have them come run past you, or you're going to see bucks trying to find her.
Right.
You know. And if you don't see anything, then it's going on. It's just not going on right there. It might be going on over the east side of the property, or the north, or wherever.
That's right. And this is the time. I mean, you get in the middle of January around here, the rut's happening.
Yeah.
You just got to be where it's happening.
Yeah. And it's, there's something I'd love to get, and maybe we'll get Bronson Strickland back on one day and talk about this.
I want you to get him on. I think that was a great show you did with him, Sean.
Yeah. And we're trying to get him.
I learned a lot.
And if y'all want to search for that show on the podcast, just go into our podcast, search for Bronson Strickland, like Bronson Strickland. But one of the things I've just wondered, this is my...
He's with Mississippi.
Well, he was with Mississippi State in the deer lab. He's now gone private.
Okay.
But he's still consulting and doing all that.
Right.
But this thing I've noticed, and maybe y'all can chime in on the Facebook page and let me know if you've seen this. Once I get, and this comes from, hunting for majority of my life, deer hunting, but the last 10 years or so, maybe more than that, maybe 15 years, being a guy that runs a lot of cameras. So I get to see what happens when I'm not there and in those places. Once the rut gets in, but then I see it almost come and go like the tide, meaning there'll be a period of time they're always looking for does, but there's like inside this window that is the rut, I'll see 2 or 3 day periods that are just more active, and then for 2 days, like I joke about with turkeys. When they have that day, they blow the leaves off the trees, and the next day they don't.
Right.
It's because they're tired. They partied too hard. But I wonder, they're rutting the whole time, and it just takes a doe coming in. But you know what I'm saying? You'll see with camera activity, you'll see, there's 2 or 3 days, you're like, my gosh. And then, not that they go away, but maybe they're not in the daylight as much. And then it comes back like waves here.
But there again, the camera doesn't see it.
It
all.
Does not.
That's,
100%.
That's the thing.
There's a danger to the camera to assume that you're seeing everything.
That's
going
right.
On.
I learned that lesson in Kansas. I got like 18 cameras in there, and you don't see all the deer. This is say.
I 100% agree. I'm just saying the activity I see in these given places. So like running 24 cameras and watching that, the activity around a feeder or something like that. You watch it. I mean, it's like there's just a couple days that it'll just be bonkers, and then maybe it is going on somewhere else. But then there are a couple days it's just normal. Then it goes back to being bonkers.
Yeah, that camera just happens to be in the right position when that happens, I believe,
or the right doe is in front of it that brings the buck in.
Yeah, because you can be sitting there looking at a feeder and a feed, and shooter bucks you can see at 50 yards, 100 yards, or whatever, they're with the doe chasing doe. They don't come nowhere around that feeder. So if you're just looking at the food and you got the camera there, you think, well, nothing's going on.
Yeah.
But you can look over here 100 yards and there's one chasing a doe, and you look back on the other side of the creek over there and there's one chasing one over there, but they're not coming to the feeder. So you
– Yeah, it's just if a doe drags one in front of the feeder. But you're right. And I don't have all my cameras on feeders, but and actually, like we're looking at a picture right here, don't have any stand near that feeder. Like half of my feeders probably don't have a stand. Yeah, a third of them don't have a stand near them.
Right.
They're just to keep. And I really don't do a lot of baiting until this time of year, trying to keep bucks, keep does on my property so the bucks will stay on the property and not get, get killed elsewhere is why I'm running that. But I don't know. So it's been good. I haven't I did not click the safety off. I thought about it on one, but it's been good. It's been just them doing it all. A lot of seeing bucks fighting, locked up, chasing, following. You know, there's different, like chasing to me is chasing.
Right.
They're running.
Right.
See a lot more following probably last weekend than I did chasing.
Yeah.
But following close.
Sure.
You know, or come in and chase her around for a second. You'll see that chase her around for a second, then go to eat, you know. And then 2 minutes later, he's going to chase again. But on.
I know in South Mobile County, I got a real good friend that hunts all the time, and it's happening down there. They're chasing big time.
Yeah, and that's they're chasing big time with me. But, I mean, you'll see, like, chasing, then you'll see some following.
Yeah.
And you see, listen, it's going on now, and it seems like it's going on lots of places out there. So hopefully you get after it. And I don't know. I mean, you know, I got in a discussion this last weekend after – our show, you know, came on about, you know, the idea of green fields during the rut.
Right.
And I get what, I mean, Jay, Lord knows, I will not disagree with Jay Gratting or you. And running transition. In other words, the trails that those bucks are using. But once he does get on a doe, if that doe is coming through a green field, and I'm thinking about, I'm lucky enough to have green fields that have open country next to them. Higher grasses and stuff like that, but even if that buck doesn't commit to the field, I can see him.
Right.
Like she drags him out.
Yeah.
So that's what, you know, just, I mean, I can't completely not hunt green fields during the rut.
Well, sure.
It's not the rut, I don't hunt them very much at all. I hunt at ladders in the woods, but it's the call of the number of bucks I've killed that have been drug into a green patch, you know, by a doe. I don't know.
You know, we was talking last week with Jay. I mean, I'm going to say 85-90% of the deer killed this time of year is probably killed in Greenfield. That's just where people hunt now.
Mm-hmm.
They got shooting houses. It's cold. They want to be comfortable. They're going to be sitting in a shooting house.
Yeah, speaking of
most
cold,
of the time.
Like last weekend and then like this weekend, I wonder if the sales of – and I've already bought mine so I can talk – the little propane cans.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, they're a hot commodity.
Yeah. You need to buy them in the summertime, Sean.
Yeah, well, I do. I stock up for my camper and all that. We use it to cook on the boat as well. But the I got a good
and
stock.
And you need to have a refill, too, where you can refill them.
Right. Well, that's a whole other show. So a buddy of mine bought me this deal to refill off the big ones. But
a little
if you read the thing, it's a federal offense and felony to do that. So I'm not doing that.
Oh, well, I don't
There's a certain company out there that's making them now. They are refillable, but you can't the regular Coleman ones.
Yeah.
If you refill them, you're in violation of federal code and could be a felony.
Mm. Well, I know some friends of mine,
I've heard of people
that have done that an awful lot.
Yep. So word on the street is.
Yeah, and they tell me, too, this is another little thing.
Do they weigh them to make sure?
No, you stick them in the refrigerator, get them real cold, and they suck more gas in
go
there.
Google that because they said that's one of the problems.
Yeah.
If you do that, then they become dangerous.
Oh, okay.
That's what I hear on the streets.
I'm glad my buddy hadn't got blown up.
Yeah, just saying. Just putting that out there. But, you know, one thing about the heating thing, too, I mean, this is, I don't, maybe we're telling some people, a lot of y'all know this, it sounds cliche, but stay in the damn stand.
Yes.
Even
this time of year.
Or move, like Jay said, but stay in the woods.
Yeah.
Woods, shooting house, field, whatever. Stay out hunting because it's all day. I mean, if you run cameras, you know what I'm talking about. It's all day.
That's right.
And I mean, there's one buck showing up at a place, you know, and a buddy of mine were talking, and I said, somebody absolutely needs to camp out. I said, pack two sandwiches, do whatever, because at some point in the hours of daylight, let's hope, it might be after daylight, he's going to come through there. But yeah, it's not always at 7:30. It's not always at 3:30. It's 1:16 p.m. It's, you know, 10:29. I mean,
in a way, you can about prove that is when you go out, you go to Canada, go hunting, you go out Missouri, Illinois, Kansas, Iowa, whatever. When you go with an outfitter, they put you in there in the morning, especially during rut, and you come out at dark. And probably half the deer are killed between 10 and 2 o'clock in the middle of the day during the rut.
Well, you know, I do the same thing. I do it here during the rut, but also like when I go to Pennsylvania, didn't go this year, but a lot of years I'll go to Pennsylvania. And because I think it's driven by the fact it's a short season. Yeah. I'm only up there for a certain amount of time. I stay on all day. I mean, once in a while I've gotten down and come down for an hour or something, but usually I stay up all day.
It can get boring. There's no question about it. It can get boring. But if you know there's a big deer in that area, I advise you to stay there all day during the rut.
Yep.
Now, if it's not during the rut, that's different.
Time to go back to the camp.
During the rut, you better stay there all day long.
Which comes to, we'll probably do a discussion one day on the things that make it more comfortable. We've got some new, because ladder stand, the cushions they give you wear out very quickly unless you have the mesh seats. I'm trying to transition the mesh seats.
Yes.
But if you have that no butts at all disease like I do, getting you a good cushion, like Mike, listen, when we go turkey hunting, Mike and I turkey hunting, he is the most patient turkey hunter ever. It's partially because it's like sitting on a couch in his house. It's so comfortable.
Yes.
If you go sit all day, get you a cushion to go with you.
Absolutely.
All right, coming right back. Talk some ducks and ducks. A discussion we've had around duck blinds forever made it to Washington last week. We'll talk about that as well when we come back. Plus, Wayne Miller talks some bass fishing with us coming up in just a little bit as well. Stay right there. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. And, runt going on. Also, I may be on assignment here. So, as this show airs. Okay, I'm on assignment because a heck of a front's coming through. And I will leave the deer alone long enough to go duck hunting up in the North Mississippi Delta. Because the weather's, like, and Mike just looks at me, shakes his head. But, you know, duck hunters, you get it. It looks absolutely frozen and miserable, which is exciting.
It looks like it's the worst weather you could possibly drive in, go anywhere. Most people are going to be sitting in their house, not going out, and even look at the sky. It's going to be so bad.
But us duck hunters,
we can't go duck hunting.
We go lean against a tree up in the
You've been waiting for this weather.
100%. Yeah. But looking at highs not for 3 days, not breaking it out of freezing, snow,
ice.
Yeah, that's the thing. The ice thing, we'll see. I hope it's just snow because ice is a real pain. Snow is fun. Now they're calling for, they've updated it. I told you earlier it's 3 to 5 inches of snow where I'm going. Now they updated to 8 to 12 inches of snow expected. Yeah, by the way, you may have a guest host on Midday Mobile on Monday. We'll see.
Yeah.
out there getting after it. But speaking of ducks, this came up and it was wild. I told Mike, it was wild to see testimony and in front of Senate committee, and they're talking about ducks in Louisiana.
Senate committee or Congress?
The Senate committee.
Okay.
And they're talking about ducks. And I'm like, ooh. So is John Kennedy, Senator John Kennedy, who's
from
pretty funny guy.
Yeah.
But he is he's publicly criticizing the flooded corn. Okay, this has been a discussion duck hunters forever. People in Missouri are flooding corn, holding the ducks, they're not migrating.
Yeah.
Right? We're not getting the pushes of ducks. You know, that is like a simple, we'll read through it here and then we can, because I'd like to have this conversation on further shows. Kennedy called the intentional flooding of corn fields to attract ducks legal baiting and unsportsmanlike. He argues the practice goes beyond normal farming and can essentially lure ducks into places where they can be hunted rather than allowing for natural migration patterns. Kennedy points to duck harvest statistics for Louisiana, where mallard harvest dropped dramatically, about 95% drop in mallard harvest from 1999 to 2021. He claims it's because ducks are short-stopping their migration, settling in areas with flooded corn farther north instead of continuing south to Louisiana and other nearby states. And I want to point out, too, this is a discussion of mallards, because we've got different kind of, you've heard Seth Maddox and I go on the show. He's waterfowl coordinator for the state, and he and I talk about calendar ducks. There's some ducks that are coming because of photo period, just the length of day they're coming no matter what.
Right.
There's some that mallards and green-winged teal, oddly enough, big mallards and little green-winged teal, kind of have to have some cold on their butt to move them south. Louisiana has experienced a drop in mallards. We have as well. I mean, Alabama was not always a big mallard state, but I had some places, even down here, I could go find a couple.
Yeah.
There are a few still around. It's just not as consistent as it used to be. But one of the things we got to talk about
the flyway.
We're talking about the flyway. Well, but I was going to say about Louisiana, though. If you check their stats for this year, of course, this is, you know, Kennedy's, his people probably, this is your representative government. People have been saying, hey, you got to do something about this, Senator.
Yeah.
And he took it to Washington. This year, Louisiana duck flight numbers are, they're higher than they've been in the last 10 years. It's been tough in Louisiana, but this year it's not. And I said, you know, the other day, I think part of that happens to be the reason that us, like in North Mississippi, where I'm hunting now, didn't have ducks early, because it's so dry up there.
Yeah.
Like I've told you, none of the, unless people are pumping, there's just not backwater.
Yeah.
I mean, that you drive by the ditches, they're normally full. You can see they're 12 feet deep and dry.
Yeah.
Backwater in the woods where the bayous come up and flood out in the buck brush, they're dry. You're deer hunting in there. So I think a lot of ducks just passed over areas that, unless you were pumping, and pumping only holds so many ducks, they went on south. So while he's making this argument, I do want to point out Louisiana numbers are high for total ducks. But mallards are the question, because not all ducks, you know, mallards definitely use flooded corn.
Sure.
And can use it. It's been shown that wood ducks to some degree, pintails and snow geese will use it. A lot of other ducks don't use it, I think because they can't access it. Because people say, man, if you sling corn out there, they'll eat it. Sure. I'm talking about knocking it off of the ears.
Yeah.
It's a lot of ducks don't use it. But so Kennedy goes on to talk about this drop. He's emphasizing, and this is what I was getting to, too, when they were speaking in Congress, I was like, listen, if you're going to ban flooding corn, what about rice fields? I mean, I hunt on rice fields now.
Yeah.
He said that rice, this is Kennedy, said naturally requires flooding for its agricultural cycle, but corn does not. So flooding corn is a purposeful manipulation and not part of growing that crop.
Well, that's,
so
that's a fact.
How, you know, so, and you got to remember, too, so the rules around baiting, okay? We talk about during getting ready for dove season. We say this all the time. You can grow a crop in a field. And it's different for doves and ducks. You can grow a field of millet or sorghum or whatever, and you can bush hog it. You can burn it. You can have all that seed right there. You can't bring additional seed in, but you can do that. With ducks, you can't do that. You can't grow a crop and mow it and leave it and hunt over it legally.
Yes.
Now, there have been 30 years of hunting in Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi. I've seen places where they couldn't get the crops out, whether that was real or not, that you had some standing crops there, or because they bush hogged an area and then couldn't get another area. So you had a landing zone, but
there's all kind of manipulations.
So he's talking about banning flooding corn. And this is what Missouri has made. Missouri really has been the hot spot for this. Missouri has become like, if time wasn't an issue and I could just drive, I wouldn't have a duck club in Mississippi, Louisiana, or Arkansas.
Yeah,
I'd be up in north central Missouri.
Yeah,
or somewhere along the Mississippi on the east side of Missouri, but I'd be in Missouri.
Yeah.
Compounding this is why I just think it's worth a bigger discussion. Is do I think that flooding cornfields? Because once they have shown in studies, once mallards by a little after Christmas make it to a certain point in latitude south, they kind of stay there, okay, for the season,
unless bad weather. Well,
the bad weather,
there, right?
But that's the thing they're showing with these. And now it's not a ton of ducks, but they've done these GPS trackers on ducks. So we're seeing in real time what's happening. They generally ride it out. The mallards do. Other ducks will move, but the mallards ride it out. And so if there's food nearby, they can ride it out, even if it gets cold, real cold. And we used to think it just snowpack would run them out, but they seem to be able to hack it out for 3 or 4 days, even if snowpack comes in. This is mallards. So does the corn keep those mallards that might normally have come south. The difference is, too, during that period of time that Senator Kennedy's talking about, like, I'm on his side, but I just want to make sure I'm being fair. We also have had, like, a lot warmer winters. We get cold pops, like right. we got going on right now, but it lasts for 4 days, three yeah. days, where we might not have got as cold as abruptly in the past, but it stayed colder longer to our north.
Yeah.
And so I don't know how much is just the corn and how much is the weather or some combination therein. You know, so it's the this is a discussion. When you hear flooded corn, it is a mallard discussion. They pointed out that it is about mallards and their move. I mean, pintails also will use it. Snow geese will use it. Snow geese will destroy it. So
they're saying that is baiting.
They're saying it's baiting because, baiting. And he's saying it's different than rice. So right. obviously, and it's good politics for Louisiana because they don't grow a lot of corn in Louisiana. Yeah. They grow a lot of rice, yeah. although not as much as they used to, which is why one of the arguments, too, Louisiana doesn't see as many dunks because a lot of places that were rice are now sugarcane.
Sure. You know?
And it used to be, you know, down south Louisiana was a place to hunt speckle belly geese, something I love to do. Well, one of the reasons I'm hunting in North Mississippi right now is there's a lot of speckle belly geese.
Yeah.
Like Louisiana used to have, but there's not as many rice fields in Louisiana as there used to be. And so, you know, how much of that? There, so I get what Senator Kennedy's talking about and the worry about flooded corn and fooling with the migration. At the same time, there are some other things going on, you know. And if we get an all-out super cold winter, would that all turn around? I don't know. You got to be studying that for a decade or so to figure that out.
And I'm sure we got a lot of people studying that.
Yes. Yeah, they are. And the backpack GPS transmitters on mallards, now it's not, I think they get like 180 to 100 of them tagged. So it's not like
yeah.
thousands.
Yeah.
But they kind of show this stuff, and these researchers have been saying, hey, the one thing to open my eyes is the ducks you have like by New Year's, by the after Christmas, are the ducks you're going to have. Like, because I used to, I mean, and I hunted in that Delta over there in that ag country for many decades, started in the 90s.
Yeah.
And we for sure would turn and look north on a big front, and we saw ducks coming in. We were pretty sure that we were getting ducks from way north, even, and I don't know if we paid attention whether it was January or December. They said that absolutely happens in December. By January, they're kind of being, they are where they are. Now, is that influenced by the flooded corn? You know, that they're not, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Or the lack of a super cold front, you know, but I mean, we'll see this weekend, like, testing that theory out there on assignment. So it's, and maybe it's also the publicity. We used to talk about it happening. People say, I know a club up there and they're flooding corn, but you got some superstars up there, place like Habitat Flats that, I mean, their YouTube videos get hundreds of thousands of views. That place is all, it's not all flooded corn. They have good loafing holes, cypress. They have ponds, and then they have corn as well. And they hold just a ton of ducks.
Yeah.
And they hold them the whole way to the end of the season.
It's legal right now.
It's legal right now. So that's yeah. And you know where they also do it? I think it's interesting, and maybe we get Seth Maddox on. This goes on in North Alabama along the Tennessee River. Even the management areas like Raccoon Creek, where I've hunted and all that, they had that.
Yeah.
And the private clubs up there flood corn, and they do that. So does this get – I mean, it was just strange for – to have somebody in Washington talking about this, I think it's cool. They had the people from Delta Waterfowl there and Ducks Unlimited talking. But will they change the law? I don't know. But this is a discussion we have going forward. Because we don't, you know, we talk about all the different reasons. We don't get the same duck migration we used to in the Delta. I mean, there's a reason people like me are hunting elsewhere. We grew up hunting the Delta. And why you don't see mallards where you maybe used to as well. All right, so show's going in the future. Go Google this and we'll talk about this and get Seth on. But yeah, actually talking about mallard migration and flooded corn in Washington. It's good to have Southern senators.
Well, the right man was talking about it.
That's right. All right. Coming right back, Wayne Miller joins us next. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. And I'll tell you what, I'll pop one of those stories up over on our Facebook page about Senator Kennedy and the corn baiting. And I want to hear what y'all have to think. Check it out, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. All right, we'll shift gears here. Although this guy likes duck hunters because at some point in the year he's going to fish duck blinds in the Delta. Yeah. It's our buddy Captain Wayne Miller.
Pretty soon.
Yeah, hey, Captain Wayne.
Hey, guys. Great to be with y'all.
Yeah, and great for us to be able to sit here and breeze through the pictures of the bass you're catching. That's pretty fine fish.
Man, I'll tell you what, it's been an incredible week this past week. But, you know, the Delta just continues to amaze me, man. I mean, our fishery's in great shape, and it's just been so incredible over the last few months because, as I'm sure both you are aware, I mean, we had an extremely dry fall.
Yes.
And then, so we had low water. So, man, when that water got really down and in great shape, I mean, it's held up. I mean, we had one little bump on the water, you know, where we saw the little rise on the rivers, but everything's back down low right now. And but a couple of amazing things about the Delta that I'll share with y'all and with the listeners is we've already had a wave of fish spawn on the Delta.
I was wondering about that.
Really?
I was wondering, yeah. You've been, because you talk about it's not the spawn here. It's multiple spawns. Yeah.
You know, what we had less than 2 weeks ago, we had water temperatures across the Delta were in the low 70s. And there were many places where it was in the mid 70s.
Wow.
And those fish that I've been sending you those pictures that I've been catching this week, of course, we had some really good cold nights the first part of the week, but I've been fishing in water that's 48 degrees.
That's a significant drop.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen that kind of swing in the water temperature. Now, you know, what you have to keep in mind is we also, at the same time, we've got low water conditions on the rivers, so our river stages are down. And we've been in an extremely strong tide cycle, so we've had that going, plus a north wind. So, you know, just in the course of 2 weeks, these fish have gone from spawning in mid-70-degree water to dropping 3 to 4 feet of water out from under them, and the water temperature dropping over 20 degrees.
You know, I wonder what happens to those. I know this is nerd science stuff, but because we're talking about catching them, but when they spawn and they put those eggs down on whatever's hard there, the wood or whatever, the substrate, and then the temperature goes down that far, I wonder if those eggs make or not, if they lose that clutch or.
You know, I don't know. I really couldn't answer that, but, you know, I think one of the, you know, I mean, God's creation is amazing because one of the things about having different waves of fish spawning is I'm sure we lose some, but just the sheer numbers of fish we have on this Delta and that spawn being spread out over such an extended period of time, I think kind of ensures that every year we're still going to have that, you know, a good spawn and, you know, so it kind of protects itself by design.
Yeah, well, there's not, I mean, you look at systems, that whether we're talking about fish or talking about critters, there's not room for all of them. That's why there's predators and diseases and all that stuff. I mean, there's not room for all of them.
That's right.
They try to make more babies, yeah. But there's only so many slots, you know, out there. So you're seeing, you're catching those fish spawned, you seeing the next set, like the ones you caught afterwards, you see them put on eggs. So you seeing like the next wave?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, one thing that's amazing, some of those pictures I sent you, and I've got plenty more I can send you for you to look at, but some of them you can tell they're obviously pre-spawned fish.
Yeah.
And some of them have, I mean, you can tell that they've already spawned. They've spawned out. So, you know, we've got them kind of going and coming. So it's, you know, a pretty unique situation, but, you know, those conditions that I just described, you know, even though these fish are still biting, it makes it a real challenge to try to go out there and stay on fish. You know, so, you know, I would be lying to you, you know, I had somebody recently tell me, they made the comment, they said, man, I just hear, you know, the fish all on the Delta, you know, they've just been eating it up for months and months. And, you know, he was kind of describing it, yet he had not been out there.
Yeah.
But I told him, I said, well, you know, you don't just, you know, run the boat anywhere you want to and sit down and start catching fish. You know, that's not the way this deal works.
No, that's why we go with guides like you, because you stay on them.
But, you know, even if you go every day, it still is a challenge because of all those changing conditions that we have. And for me, it makes me have even more respect for these fish, because for them to be able to, you know, endure in those kind of conditions is really amazing. You know, I mean, they're pummeled with, you know, temperature swings, water depth. I mean, just everything you can imagine. And then on top of that, I mean, we all know what's coming. I mean, we're going to get a big dose of high muddy water.
Sooner or later, it's coming.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, they'll have to deal with that too. So, but, you know, it really makes it a challenge. But, you know, I guess one of the things that I really want to emphasize for people that don't get to go as often as somebody like me, which there's not very many people that do, and I realize that I'm really blessed to have that opportunity. But for people that go infrequently, you know, it makes it tough. But one thing I'll tell you, this time of year, you know, with these changing conditions that we see every week just cycling, you know, it's really important to pay attention to the basics, to our river stages. You know, make sure you don't have a big rise on the river. And, you know, I mean, people make the mistake all the time. I have people tell me, man, you know, we went up and launched at Mount Vernon, and, man, it's high and blowing up there. Well, you know, if you got a 8-foot rise on the Alabama and a 10-foot rise on the Tom, and the Mobile's going to 11 feet, probably not a good idea to go up there.
In a south wind.
So, yeah, you know, I mean, so, you know, you can do a lot to help yourself just by really paying attention to the conditions that we have. And then, you, of course, anytime you're on a tidal fishery, you have to factor in that tide and then the predominant wind, just like you just got through saying, Mike. Man, people don't realize how much that wind impacts this fishery. It is really, I mean, 100%. It's important.
Yeah.
So, you know, all those things, you know, come together to present a challenge. But then again, you know, we just have so many fish on this delta, you know, and they want to eat. I can tell you, man, it's, you know, and a lot of times you just have to be versatile. You have to go out there, you know, it's like, yesterday, man, I really whacked them on a crankbait. Well, today when I got out there, you know, what did I want to throw? Well, of course, I wanted to replicate that crankbait bite. But guess what? They weren't on that crankbait as good today. And, you know, I finally had to make myself throw a Junebug speed worm, and, man, I started whacking them.
Well, wasn't too much. Wait a second. He wanted to catch him on crankbait, but don't let Captain Wayne Miller make you think somebody had to twist his arm to throw a Junebug speed crawl, because that's one of his favorites, too. So stop with that, Wayne.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I was forced to do it. So.
Yeah. Breaking my heart, Captain.
There's been some days, Wayne, I don't even know how you could launch your boat. The water has been so low.
Well, y'all saw the pictures of that. I haven't been up there, which is a weird year, but they couldn't even get out of Bates Lake easily. This has been a few weeks ago.
Yeah. But, you get a north wind blowing on a
you don't have
low
any river
tide.
Rise. Yeah.
And we don't have any river water coming down. I mean, has there been some days as you go to launch a boat and you couldn't launch a boat, or at the launch ramp you're launching at, you're still good?
Well, you know, one thing that I do, Mike, and a lot of people ask me about this, because I had a real good friend of mine went down and launched on the causeway one day last week, and it was a blowout. Well, you know, I launched up in the middle and ran down because I can stay on the main waterways, you know, the main rivers, and I can access just about anything I want to fish. But if you go down there to launch with those conditions, and that's what I'm talking about,
you got to know
all this stuff. You know, he called me an hour into my day and says, "Man, I'm stuck on a bar down here." Well, you know, I hate
well,
it.
Just
for
wait.
Him.
Just wait 6 hours and
12.
Yeah, yeah.
Depends but, on what part of the tide he was on. Yep.
A lot of times, what you have to do is just factor in. You know, I'd be a lot better off to launch. You know, at one of the launches up in the middle. And this rundown.
Yeah, it does make sense because you get your I mean, those launches up there are deep and you're in deep.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
stay in deep water. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, it's like I say, man, this fishery is such a challenge, but it's just amazing, you know, how many fish we have, both from the standpoint of quantity and quality. So, you know, it's worth the effort you have to put in.
Okay, listen, when we come back from the break, I want to talk about how you've got my attention with quantity and quality. And you mentioned crankbait, you mentioned speed crawl, but we're going to talk about kind of depth and where you're finding these fish. We come back, more of our conversation with Captain Wayne Miller, who had to switch from a crankbait to continue to stack the bass. It's breaking my heart. Be right back. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all along, and always great to talk to our buddy Captain Wayne Miller. Which let's do this here too at the before we wrap up too. People want to get in touch with you and get a trip booked to go catching. And that, I mean, the point you made, I mean, because you're on the water dang near every day, staying on these fish. So it's not just something you do in the spring or the fall. You're running trips this time of year and catching fish. How do they get in touch with you?
They can reach me at 251-455-7404.
Or just to put it through the, you know, good old boy telegraph, if y'all just send a text into the show when I'm in here, I'll give you Wayne's number as well,
yeah.
If you didn't write it down.
Let me tell you what, you got to be pretty tough, too, Sean, to go just about every day on all weather conditions. And everybody knows how cold it's been here
yeah.
recently. And Wayne goes every day. I mean, like Bobby Abascotta. I mean,
yeah.
you got to be tough. Or
yeah,
you got to
tell you what, though, Mike, it's amazing. The gear that we have available to us nowadays is absolutely phenomenal. When I think about what we used to do 30, 40 years ago. Man,
oh, yes.
It was painful back then. Man.
It was. I can remember all the things we used to do to try to stay warm, put newspaper in our shoes. And,
mm-hmm.
I mean, plastic bags, put our feet in plastic bags. I don't understand that one, but that's what we did. No, we used to use bread bags.
That's exactly
bread right. bags.
Yeah.
Yeah, just yeah. crazy things that we used to do to keep our feet. And I guess one of the hardest things to do is keep your hands warm while you're fishing.
Yeah.
Hot hands, yeah, man.
Really,
those
yeah.
things are gold. Those hot hands.
Yeah. Yeah.
You put them
yeah,
in your pockets. Ooh, I love them.
They are fantastic. But you know, I'm glad you mentioned that, though, Mike, because of the fact that one thing we shouldn't ever avoid talking about for this time of year is just to remind people to make sure you have, you know, a kit. Emergency kit with some towels and some dry clothes, because with 48 degree water temper, I can tell you, man, that's dangerous.
It is if you fall over.
Yep. Yeah. Just yeah. have that dry clothes and towels is a great idea. I mean,
yep.
whether duck hunting, fishing, or anything, that's a key.
Yeah.
We got a couple minutes left here. I want to. So you mentioned crankbaits. You mentioned soft plastic. Give me an idea, kind of somebody going out there this weekend. Water depth. Structure, what I mean, kind of where do you even start trying to pick this apart?
Yeah, well, you know, the best thing about this time of year, if you focus on the middle and the lower delta, you know, we have so many creeks that are adjacent to bays, and all these creeks are full of fish. So, what you want to do is access one of these creeks.
Okay, so he just told you a formula, y'all. Creeks adjacent to bays. In other words, they're close to a bay. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So, you know, you get in there, and when you start talking about deep water, it's relative to the creek. So, I mean, if you start talking about deep water in some of the creeks up in the middle, you know, that may be 18, 20 feet of water. But when you talk about deep water down along the causeway in those creeks, you may be talking about 5 or 6 feet of water. So, you know, but typically what I try to do is, you know, depending on what the tide movement is, I get in there and I just start hitting different areas. You know, I'll hit an outside bend, you know, that's got grass on it and got some wood cover. And I see, you know, I try a multitude of baits. You know, I'll try crankbaits, spinnerbaits, plastic, and I work that. But you have to pay attention to what that current is doing on that particular, you know, type structure, and then the depth, and if you catch fish. Well, if you don't go to the same type, you know, scenario, you know, a mile down the creek or a half a mile down the creek. Go hit something else. Hit a flat that's got some, you know, laydowns on it. Try something different. And if you keep bouncing, you know, and trying those techniques, you know, what happens typically is all of a sudden, boom, you start catching fish. If you pay attention to that, typically what happens is you can go not only in that creek, but some of the other creeks. And a lot of times you can duplicate that, which is the age-old, you know, nomenclature is called a pattern. And right. And you can just run that pattern, and as long as that tide is doing about the same thing, I mean, you'll keep catching fish. But it demands diversity. I mean, you can't go out there, and man, even as much as I go, I'm guilty of it all the time, just like I did today, man. I mean, I wanted to throw a crankbait so bad today I could taste
it. Because you caught them yesterday on it.
Yeah. But, you know, you just – and just because your buddy went into Conway a week ago and caught him on a spinnerbait, that spinnerbait bite may be dead as a hammer in there right now. So you have to be willing to go in there and work some plastic off the bank. If the water may be a foot or two lower than what it was when your buddy was in there. The water may have been up on the grass, and that may be why he was able to take a spinnerbait and catch them. But, you know, that's going to change every day. So you've got to be willing to go out there with an open mind and try different techniques. And it's really great if you've got a person to go with you, because you can be trying two different baits at the same time,
right?
And it really eliminates a lot of time associated with trying to narrow things down and develop that pattern.
So if you could choose a tide right now, would you want an incoming or outgoing tide?
I would want an outgoing, Mike, and, you know, just because what has happened, especially as this water has gotten extremely cold again, you know, it bunches those fish up.
In the deeper water. If you find a place that's got 5-6 foot of water with a little structure on it, then that's where they're going to be laying.
And the advantage for me, as much time as I spend on the Delta, is I don't have to search for a lot of those places. I know where about 8,000 of them are.
Yeah.
It's true. All right. That doesn't get you fired up to go catch some bass right now, and we'll be talking about it more through the winter, late winter here in spring. Captain Wayne Miller, as always, we appreciate it, man. We'll let you get back to doing what you do. Best catching bass at the Mobile Tensaw Delta, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Wayne.
Okay, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, buddy. All right, there he goes, Captain Wayne Miller. We're wrapping up for this week. We'll do it again next week. Y'all have a great one.